The second Sunday of Easter. The first reading comes from the Acts of the Apostles in Acts 2, chapter 2, verses 42 to 47. The responsorial psalm is part of Psalm 117. The second reading is from the first letter of Peter, chapter 1, verses 3 to 9. And the gospel today is from John, chapter 20, 19 to 31. Now, John's gospel today talks about Thomas. Some of you know him as Thomas the Doubter. I've preached on Thomas before, and I'm actually going to move away from the gospel today, with your permission, from a distance. And I would like to concentrate a little more for my reflection and homily on the second reading, because there are a couple of words in there that just strike me so powerfully at the moment. And the words from that first letter of Peter in chapter 1 there, towards the last part of today's reading, say, "You did not see him, yet you love him." You did not see him, yet you love him. And then I think of the first reading, connecting that to the first reading, written by Luke, the second part of his works, the Acts of the Apostles. And we have in there what the first community of Christians did when they came together to pray and celebrate what we would call today Eucharist. Now, the majority of those people had not seen him, yet they loved him. And then here we are today, on the second week of Easter, all in lockdown, doing what we can without seeing him, but loving him. Reflect on the Acts of the Apostles reading, where we see what that early Christian community did. And you'll see in there that there are many elements of what we would normally celebrate on our Sunday Eucharist together as a community. And why I suppose it's so strong for me with the second reading is because we can't come together as a community. And it doesn't break my heart, it strains my heart. But it doesn't break it, because for all of my adult life, and for, I suppose, most of those who are listening, for your life since you came to the age of reason and faith and reason, you too were able to say with me, "We did not see him, yet we love him." I find that so reassuring, even in these days when I can't be with the community, and you as a community can't be with your priest. This might also be a little reassuring for you, and some of you know that I like to dabble in a bit of history at times, as I partake in history. But the earliest description that we have outside of the New Testament of what the early believers did when they met on Sundays was actually preserved for us in a reflection by a chap by the name of Saint Justin the Martyr. Now, Justin wrote this reflection, we think, in about 150 AD. So 150 AD, very young church. He apparently kept something of a diary, and he recorded what happened on one particular Sunday. And he called this his, and I quote, "Apology." That's the name of it, the Apology of St. Martin the Juster. St. Justin the Martyr, my apologies, St. Justin the Martyr. You can look it up. St. Justin's Apology. Now, if I can remember some of it, I'll get this out. If I can't, I will best be rewording what my recall says to me or brings to mind. And Justin went on and he said that on the day that is named after the sun, we come together from the outlying districts to one of our homes where the memoirs of the apostles are read. And then the president of the assembly, he was known as the presider, urged all to follow the lessons and the good example that they contained. And then the bread and the wine are offered, and the president of the assembly would recite a prayer of thanksgiving, from what I recall, to the best of his ability. And then all of those present would express their approval by saying loudly, Amen. Now, that was, of course, in the days before we had what we know today as the Eucharistic prayers. So it's the days before print as we know it today. And so the presider would make the prayers up that were dignified and represented the elements of what was happening as that community gathered around the breaking of the bread. So that's the prayer of thanksgiving there. So even back then, there were even extraordinary ministers of communion, because Justin then says, then the gifts over which the prayer had been said are distributed, and a portion was set aside to be taken afterwards by women to those who were sick and not able to be present. And we still do that today. The tabernacle reserves the Blessed Sacrament in our church so that we can take communion to those who cannot be with us. And that is done in our church, in our parish here, by both men and women, who we know as the extraordinary ministers of communion. But in 150 AD, that part of the communal celebration on the Sunday was being celebrated in the same way, pretty much, as what we do today. Oh, here comes another part I remember. The wealthy, if they wish, would then contribute what they wished, and the collection is kept in the custody of the president for later distribution to widows and orphans. Now, that's what Justin wrote in his apology about the celebration of what we would call the Eucharist, the communal celebration coming together on Sunday, where there were, as I said, the readings, there were the offerings, there was the prayer of thanksgiving, the blessing, there was the breaking of the bread and communion, and then there was the keeping of the Blessed Sacrament, Holy Communion, for those who could not be there because they were homebound or sick. And then there was a financial collection of some kind to help. And Justin actually says it was to help the widows and the orphans. Now, on this second Sunday of Easter, from my point of view, it seems to me that all of my parishioners are widows and orphans to some degree. I know I'm being a little playful there, but to some degree, because they are not privileged at the moment to be able to be part of the community here. It's not just that they are homebound, they are bound to be at home, and that's really what the government is asking us. And that stretches our faith. It really does stretch our faith, because our faith comes to its most powerful when it's exhibited in the community. And we are a community of believers. And when we can't get together, I'm confident or sure that our faith gets tested. But please just let me say to you again, as I've been saying to myself, it's been almost haunting my head today, those lines from that second reading, you did not see him, yet you love him. Please be assured that whilst our faith might be tested as we can't come together as a community, we know in our heart of hearts that we love him. We have not seen him, but we love him. Our task, I think, at this particular time in Eastertide, as we settle on the journey towards Pentecost, our task is to see or examine in our own lives, how do I love him? I can't come together as a community. How do I love him? I have never seen him, and I have loved him. but in these days I cannot see him in the people that I love. So how do I express my love of Jesus and my love for Jesus? That would be the challenge that I would place before you at the moment, and certainly one that I place before myself. And my mind gets very creative as I try to think of ways in which I can bring Jesus to those who cannot be with us at this time, which is everybody. How can I do that best? And my delivering this homily this way is simply just one way. The bulletins that we push out electronically and the ones that are available at the entrance of the church is just another way. But there must be so much more that we can do. There's a few conversations taking place this week on how we can celebrate Anzac Day next Saturday. So if you can think of ways in which we as a community can really demonstrate our love for Jesus whilst we remember our war dead, who most of us did not see either, but we remember with great significance on the 25th of April every year, there is something that we can do. Let your creative juices flow at this time, in this Easter time, this time of great celebration. It's a time of great hope. It is a time of great joy for us as individuals, for a community, for the church. But there is also, and I'm very aware, there is also a cloud that hangs above us because of the coronavirus. It will not destroy us. The test will be in how we love Jesus, though we do not see him. We know that he is watching over us, because that's what our faith tells us. He will not give us a cross to carry that is more than we can bear. He will not do that, because he has done that for us. God bless you and those whom you love. Amen.